I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Today, we are continuing our series of opponent previews. We are now on the Texas Tech Red Raiders. This is our third episode in the series because they are the third to last opponent for the Jayhawks this year in football. To help me do that, I have returning to the podcast Seth Youngman from Staking the Plains. It is a site that covers Texas Tech. Seth, it's great to have you back.
Hey, thanks for having me, Andy. Always great to be back.
Yeah. You know, I really enjoy talking to you about this. You're one of the people that seems realistic about Texas Tech, but also really just kind of enjoys talking about everything that they do. And I really appreciate having you on the podcast. We worked together back when you were working for the SB Nation site, and it was working so well. I didn't see any reason to kind of change up who my Texas Tech guest is. So. Seth, my first question for you, obviously last year for Texas Tech did not go, I think, as well as a lot of people were hoping it would. They had a lot of quarterback issues, quarterback injuries, and kind of shuffling everything around. The first year of Matt Wells, there was a lot of promise going into the season that it could potentially be a decent year, you know, maybe push for a bowl game. I just want to kind of get your sense to start. You know, what was the final evaluation of this Texas Tech team? How disappointed were Texas Tech fans, or was that kind of to be expected given who, you know, the fact that they were dealing with year one of a brand new coach? What was the final thoughts about that team last year?
Okay, so I'll try to tackle the first part of that question, which is what were we expecting prior to? I really think that the fan base is probably, I mean, they're somewhat optimistic, but generally speaking, I think they were pretty realistic knowing that Kingsbury really didn't recruit very well his last couple of years, partly because he kind of got like a reprieve in one particular game. He beat Texas at the end of the year, ended up going to a bowl game, and that was kind of like the death knell, because then everybody else knew that he was basically coaching for his job the next year after that. And so when things didn't turn well, then, you know, no one really wanted to commit, and it just made it a really awkward situation. So during the season, I think that fans the record wasn't great by any means, but there were a lot of close losses. The Baylor game, the Kansas game, the TCU game, the Kansas State game, all were relatively close. And I think that, the Baylor game is the one that probably hurts the most, because I think that a lot of fans kind of feel like that one kind of just turned. The Kansas game, we had talked about that, I think, right before that game happened. You're like, well, I really think the Texas Tech is going to win, or you thought that Kansas was going to win because the quarterback play was going to be better, and I think that ended up being correct.
Right. Yeah, and I do remember there was a lot of questions about that particular game, just because, you know, there wasn't a whole lot. Jet Duffy, there was a lot of questions about how well he was going to play against Kansas, and how well Kansas was going to be able to kind of take advantage of maybe some of the issues that Texas Tech defense had last year.
Kansas's like offense kind of flipped the week before, right? I mean, that's when they kind of went totally Dierman. Is that what the offensive coordinator's name is?
Yes. Brent Dierman took over last year on the bye. And so they had the Texas game where they just went berserk. And then the game against Texas Tech was right after that. So yeah, it was a fairly new system. Well, they had kind of seen that stuff against Boston College earlier in the year. Like, this was the first time that he was really able to take the reins and do what he wanted with it. So yeah, I mean, it was a little tough for Texas Tech at that point to really kind of know what to expect completely. But you know, it also that game was really up and down the entire game long. Kansas, you know, fell behind quite a bit and then came storming back in the second half. It was a very exciting game, and of course had one of the wackiest endings I think I've ever seen.
Yes, it was insane. But anyway, so to answer your question initially, so I think that, you know, a lot of fans were somewhat encouraged by the fact that, hey, you know, there were a lot of close losses. Maybe those close losses go Texas Tech's way this year. And so I think that that's maybe the one big reason for optimism. I think that one of the big problems with Kingsbury was is that it just seemed like that, you know, we were out of so many games. You know, we would win some, but then, you know, we would get blown out too. Just getting our doors beaten in by Iowa State year after year after year. And this year it was relatively close, like only 10 points. And so those are the kind of things that perhaps give Texas Tech fans hope. So I think that they're somewhat optimistic. I think that Kirby Hokut, the athletic director, has tried to hire his very own Chris Beard kind of clone. You know, he's kind of got the same kind of guy at the baseball program with Tim Tadlock, and then with Beard. They're very good at developing players, and then they're also just really kind of dogged in terms of recruiting. And so I think that he's trying to get the same kind of little combination going on with Wells, because Wells is a much more aggressive recruiter. He's out there. He's actually active, whereas Kingsbury was not really at all. And so I think that that's going to make a significant difference on the recruiting trail. So I think that fans are somewhat optimistic heading into the season.
Well, that's good. So obviously last year, I think the big story for Texas Tech, or the biggest story, was the quarterback situation. You know, Alan Bowman starting the year, him getting injured, Jet Duffy taking over. You know, Bowman is no longer with the program anymore. Is that correct?
Wrong. He is definitely with the program.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Duffy's the one that's no longer with the program, right?
That is correct. Yes, sir.
Okay. I knew one of them left. I just had the wrong one. So Bowman is back now as the presumed starter. But given his kind of injury issues that he's had the last couple of years, like, how comfortable are Texas Tech fans or the staff seem to be with who would be behind him, but kind of backing him up? And do you think, you know, that it's legitimate to question whether he's actually going to be able to finish the year?
Yes. So, like, and I should also maybe give some background, too, on Duffy. So Duffy actually had another year remaining. And so then he announced that he was going to enter the transfer portal. And then he committed to a couple schools. I can't remember exactly where they were. One of them was in the MAC. And then they ended up rescinding his scholarships because he had some additional sexual assault allegations. He already had one whenever Kingsbury was here that ended up getting dismissed, where he served his time, if you will, according to the university punishment. And then it happened again. And again, these are all allegations.
Right.
And so then he ended up getting dismissed, and Texas Tech was like, yeah, he is no longer welcome here. So that's intriguing. So then you get Bowman. Yes, his ability to stay healthy is incredibly important. He's always been a little bit, I mean, punctured lung. Everybody kind of says, well, that's kind of a freak accident. But then I think he had a broken collarbone last year. And so that just kind of sent the season kind of into a spiral a bit, just because he was, again, the presumed starter. So hopefully he's bulked up some, because he was just too thin, just not big enough to actually do a whole lot, to take a good hit, because he's got to be able to take a hit, and he just hasn't been able to do that. Backing him up is a kid named Maverick McIver, which is an incredibly Texas Tech-sounding football quarterback from San Angelo. He's kind of like I have heard from the grapevine that he actually was doing quite well as a true freshman last year, but he, I think, broke an ankle, kind of like a freak non-contact maybe sort of play, not anything that, you know, I think it was just kind of like a one-off weird deal. And so he ended up redshirting all year, and actually Bowman redshirted too. So he played less than four games, and so they were able to redshirt him. So he'll just be a sophomore, I think. So that's a little bit good, too, that there might be a chance for there to be some consistency. And then you've got a freshman, a redshirt freshman, backing him up. That I heard a lot of players thought that he was actually pushing Bowman pretty hard last year.
Yeah, which is good. I mean, especially since, you know, because of Bowman's injury history, like, it's good to have someone there that's kind of pushing him, because one, it's going to make sure that he's continuing to get better. So for whatever time you do have him, but then also I think it's a lot easier to have a guy step in if he's, you know, if it's a legitimate quarterback competition coming into the year. So I guess kind of given all of that, do you think that Bowman should be the presumed starter, or do you think that with another year, or I guess maybe in any other year when we weren't, you know, having most of the spring stuff kind of derailed by COVID-19, like, do you think in any other year there might have been a question about whether Bowman would be the presumed starter, or do you think that it's still fair to wonder if he's going to be the guy that starts the year?
No, I mean, Wells has said that he is going to be the one that gets the very first snap in spring practice, or I guess not spring, fall practice, whatever we want to call it, preseason practice. So he's going to get the first snap, but he hasn't necessarily said, well, you know, Bowman's the guy and I'm not wavering. I think that he wants both guys to go out and earn it. He's going to give Bowman the first shot just because I think of seniority. But he's definitely not going to just hand it to him just because. I just don't think that Wells works that way. In fact, I think that Wells is maybe getting a little bit of beard in him from the standpoint of you want guys competing, and if you don't really want to compete, then maybe this isn't the program for you. So, you know, I don't think that he's going to baby anybody. I think that there was maybe – I don't think that Kingsbury necessarily did that, but, I mean – when you have Davis Webb, Patrick Mahomes, and Baker Mayfield on the same quarterback room, you're going to pick one of them off, two of them off most likely. So, Kingsbury ended up picking the right one, but still you always have to be a little bit careful about that.
Right. Definitely. All right. So what about the rest of this offense? Because it seemed like, you know, they didn't really have a consistent threat at running back. Thompson led most of the games in terms of their high rusher last year, but I'm only seeing one game where he had over 100 yards. Texas Tech used to kind of be the wide receiver U, where every year they had a ton of wide receivers that were highly rated coming out. I don't know how much of that was just because of the system that Cliff Kingsbury had in place there, or, you know, the actual talent and then the deep talent that they have wide receiver-wise. But it seems like the rest of the skill positions don't have as much talent as they normally would have. Is there somebody that I'm overlooking, or is there new blood that's coming into the program? Or is it a fair assessment to say that maybe the rest of the offense just doesn't have the pieces it needs to jump up and be one of the more productive offenses in the Big 12 this year?
No, I mean, I think that they are going to be very productive. From a passing perspective, I think that they were like seventh in the nation last year or something to that effect, just in terms of total yards. And that was with Jed Duffy, who was actually not very good in terms of he was incredibly inconsistent. And I think that the offensive coordinator, David Yost, tried to remake him on the fly in the middle of the year and not be so wild and so turnover prone, which actually ended up working, but he was also incredibly conservative too. That obviously has both its positive and negatives. So from an offensive standpoint, I think that we're going to be fine, especially because I think Bowman's a little bit more accurate than Duffy was. Thompson is actually very good, but he is the only scholarship running back on the roster right now. There's an incoming freshman who's going to be there. And then we actually got an Alabama transfer of all things. He was a guy that was kind of buried on the depth chart at Alabama, but he's going to play running back, Chidarius Townsend. So he's going to transfer. He'll have 2 years. And so he's kind of like a running back / receiver kind of guy, almost 200 pounds and 6 foot. So, and Thompson's kind of like that, bigger guy that is actually pretty good between the tackles. And then the third guy, well, and we had injuries last year too. So Armon Shine was a transfer from Utah that actually ended up getting injured maybe halfway through the year and didn't play. And then Tajon Henry actually ended up transferring to Houston. So that's what left the running back room so decimated. From a receiving standpoint, I think that it's actually going to be pretty good. We have more inside receivers than we know what to do with. The outside receivers are actually very talented. Eric Uzakama, TJ Vasher are probably going to be your starters. And then your inside guys are probably going to be a combination of a guy named Rigdon, Clay Mannix, and then Keyshawn, Carter, Keyshawn Carter. So, I mean, I think that the actual offense is going to be pretty darn good. They're going to be better than maybe a lot of people are expecting, especially if we can get some at least consistent and good quarterback play. So that part, and the offensive line lost the bookend left tackle and right tackle, but I think that they're actually going to be pretty good. I think that the offensive line coach is going to do a pretty good job of filling the gaps. And there's some veteran guys who are going to be able to step in. They're not going to be relying on freshmen or sophomores to step in at the tackle spot.
Yeah, that'll definitely help. So, I mean, it sounds like there's definitely the pieces there for them to go ahead and improve this year. And it's not like they were a huge slouch last year offensively. Like you said, you know, they were seventh in the nation in terms of passing. So I guess the biggest question, obviously, I think is going to be the defense this year, because they've had lots and lots of years of struggling defenses. But before we jump over to that, I need to go ahead and throw to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
And we're back. All right. So we talked about the offense in the first segment. Second segment here, I want to go ahead and turn over to the defense, because while they did unfortunately, that's kind of the only thing left to talk about, isn't it?
yes, I'm kidding.
I mean, oh, no, I know. Obviously, though, last year, like, they had a couple games where they had a really good defensive effort. I'm thinking Baylor and Oklahoma State. But the rest of the year, the defense was not good, and that's being nice about it. So I guess really the question is, like, what is this team, first of all, what do they have coming in that gives you any hope that the defense is going to be any better? And what is it about this team that they've struggled so much to be able to put a decent even defense on the field?
Man, that is like the $64,000 question. Okay. So last year they had, a secondary or a quarterback's coach named, or no, he's the safety coach, Kerry Cooks. And then Wells brought with him the cornerback's coach from Utah State. I don't remember his name. But so he promptly got rid of both of them at the end of the year. And then he hired a cornerback/safety's coach from Duke, who had been at Duke with David Cutcliffe for probably a decade or something like that. It was really strange. Like, it's the only time that I've ever seen, like, an assistant coach leave and the head coach, David Cutcliffe, you know, had this, like, video where he, you know, is hugging him and saying, hey, we're going to really miss you. We'll wish you the best and whatever. And so he kind of became the assistant head coach. His name is Derek Jones. And so if I'm looking for some sort of semblance of hope, that's probably it, is that, you know, Wells, after year one, said, I am not going to have crappy, you know, position coaches. So we need to step up because the players are basically going to be the same. The passing defense was abysmal. As you said, that really doesn't even do it justice. Just call it abysmal, but it was just terrible. The players are basically the same. You know, there's not a whole lot of distinction between, you know, last year and this year. A lot of them are the same. The only one that's different is Douglas Coleman, who is the guy that had that weird play at the end of the Kansas game. So really that's the only thing that's going to change. Everything else is basically going to be the same. And so, and I guess the other thing too is that Derrick Jones has said last year, Texas Tech kind of ran out, you know, that 4-2-5 kind of look with that 50s of the defensive back being kind of more of a linebacker than safety. So Derrick Jones's idea is that, no, we really need that fifth defensive back to be more of like a cover corner type of player. And so he's banking on DeMarcus Fields to be that guy, to be the guy that can basically cover a tight end, that can cover a running back, that can cover an inside receiver. And so maybe that's part of just from a schematic standpoint, it's going to be a little bit better. And then hopefully there's going to be some improvement from a pass rush standpoint. You know, we lost our best defender, Jordan Brooks, to the NFL draft, got drafted in the first round, which is just kind of amazing to consider. And so I don't think that there's going to be a ton of drop-off from that perspective, but I do think that there's going to be some drop-off on the defensive line and linebacker. And I just hope that, you know, year two in the system makes some improvement, because I don't have a lot of answers because, you know, again, we didn't get to see a whole lot or anything in the spring, so we don't necessarily know if it's going to be improved at all.
Well, yeah, I mean, not only did we not really get to see much in the spring, like, they didn't really get to do much in the spring at all, because my understanding was that when spring practices got canceled, it's not like they were able to turn those into the Zoom sessions that they're able to do or things like that. Like, they lost a lot of strategy time, a lot of teaching time, because all of that was canceled so suddenly, and they didn't really have the infrastructure in place to replace that at that point. Obviously, they're able to kind of do more now than I believe they normally would during this time of the calendar. But, you know, there's nowhere near, like, it's not a one-for-one replacement where, you know, you can go over stuff on Zoom and it's going to sink in as much as it would, you know, if you're talking about it in a classroom or you're, you know, looking at it, like walking through it out in the field or those sorts of things. So, you know, they definitely are kind of behind the eight ball compared to where they normally would. And you know, you weren't kidding when you said that they were a pretty, pretty bad defense last year. They were the fourth worst in terms of total yards given up per game, which is really, really bad. I mean, Kansas was down there too as well, but, you know, those were by far the two worst defenses in the Big 12 last year. Texas Tech was a little bit better with the scoring defenses, but I think part of that just kind of has to do with kind of where they were in particular games and more situational stuff as opposed to, you know, necessarily kind of looking at like really like the scoring margin between those two teams isn't enough, I think, for me to say that Texas Tech's defense was significantly better than Kansas last year, especially since pretty much all across the rest of the board, they're roughly the same. So, I mean, I think it's fair going into this year to say that Kansas and Texas Tech had the two worst defenses last year. Neither one looks like they're really going to be getting huge improvements just based off of what we've seen. You know, it seems like Texas Tech is kind of the trendy pick. Like when you're looking for someone to surprise, Kansas, all, you know, for some reason, I'm guessing it has more to do with Brent Dierman than anything else. Kansas is kind of the trendy pick to jump up a few spots in the Big 12 this year, which leaves Texas Tech in most polls that I've seen at the bottom of the conference. Do you think that that's fair given all the questions that they have on defense? Or do you think that maybe they're kind of overweighting a little bit of that and Texas Tech offensive improvement that we should be seeing will be enough to keep them out of the cellar?
So I think that it's the latter. I think that Texas Tech is maybe going to be a little bit better. And again, those close losses during the year, I think that hopefully will, you know, turn the other way, you know, with some experience, you know. I think that sometimes people just don't realize how much Baylor lost. I think that the cream of the crop in terms of the Big 12 is Texas, then OU, then Texas, then Iowa State. And everybody's kind of saying, well, Baylor's going to be just as good as last year, but I'm not fully certain about that. They lost a ton of talent.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think losing Matt Rhule is going to be a much bigger hit, especially with no spring practices. That's going to be a much bigger hit than I think a lot of people. But they also have the talent that's left on that defense, and they have, you know, a very good defensive-minded head coach coming in that I think when you get towards the end of the year, they could definitely be a whole lot better. But, like, I think when Texas Tech plays Baylor is going to be right around the time that if if Baylor's going to turn it around and turn into a good team, that's probably going to be when they start to do it. So, like, the real question is how many of the early, you know, the early games, like, you know, they play Kansas in week two, Baylor does. And so, like, can they avoid that kind of upset? You know, like, that's going to be, I think, the big question for Baylor that determines whether they finish in the top half or the bottom half of the Big 12 this year. I think it's fair. I do think that Oklahoma State is going to be really good this year, like a lot of people are expecting.
They should be in that top kind of quarter of the Big 12.
I think it's definitely fair to say that, you know, the bottom four teams this year in the Big 12, in no particular order, are probably going to be Kansas, West Virginia, Texas Tech. And it's either going to be Baylor most likely TCU, actually, instead of Baylor. Like, I think those are probably reasonably the four worst teams. But kind of like all the teams with brand new coaches last year, you know, the thought going into the season was you could jumble all four of those up and, you know, spit them out in any order, and I wouldn't necessarily say you're crazy. I think we're in a similar situation this year.
Yeah, and the weird thing is that, like, if you look at the Vegas book on win totals, they kind of have West Virginia, Kansas State, TCU, and Texas Tech all kind of like just, you know, everybody like, what, that's like 6.5 wins. Six or 5.5, somewhere around there. And so they basically have all of them at the same place. Again, this is Vegas. And then Kansas is at the bottom. And then, again, it's Oklahoma, Texas, probably Oklahoma State, then Iowa State. And then Baylor's kind of just sitting right there, a tick above those four teams that I mentioned. And so I kind of see it being – just a big old free-for-all in the bottom half of the conference with those four teams that are clearly, I think, much better than everybody else. And then everybody else is going to just beat each other up.
Yeah, definitely. So, all right. So kind of taking a look at the Texas Tech schedule, the first three games, they're one of the few, I guess most of the Big 12 teams are playing their entire non-conference schedule to start, but they've got they are one of the few that doesn't have a bye immediately after the non-conference, which is good for them, I think, given that they have it like right smack dab in the middle of their schedule. But those first three games at UTEP, against Alabama State, and then against Arizona, like, I think theoretically Arizona is the only one that they should have any kind of problems with. But given what happened to them last year when they went to Arizona, do you think that they're going to be motivated enough to, like, really kind of take it to Arizona in this one, or are you worried about them being able to come out of that game with a win?
No, I'm worried. That was the game that Bowman got hurt. So Duffy just had not had any reps, most likely, leading up to that game. And so he just wasn't good enough to pull off the win. And that was also the game, or a game, in which Arizona just kind of ran it down on throats in the second half and couldn't stop them at all. And so it was one of those, like, really depressing games, because it was just like, oh, well, you know, the game's kind of out of hand because they just won't stop running the ball, and we literally cannot get them off the field. So hopefully they've done something to stop that. Khalil Tate obviously doesn't return, so that hopefully helps a little bit. I think that's a toss-up game for sure. I mean, oh, you would think that with it being in Lubbock, it would be in Texas Tech's favor, because I don't necessarily think that Arizona's like this awesome football team.
They're beatable. I do remember that was like a Pac-12 after dark game that I was kind of excited about, because I thought it was going to be an up and down, and then Bowman gets hurt and, you know, Texas Tech has problems the rest of the game. And then it wasn't competitive after halftime, essentially. And so, you know, obviously that was a big disappointment, but that also was, you know, kind of pretending the rest of the problems that Texas Tech was going to have, where the defense, you know, wasn't anywhere near good enough to keep them in games by itself, and the offense was stop and start all year long once Duffy took over. So, obviously the opener for the Big 12 is a little tough, traveling to Iowa State.
Let's just rip off the Band-Aid.
Then I was going to say the next two games sandwiched around your bye are, you know, at home against West Virginia and then at home against Baylor. And if what you're saying is true, like, if Baylor has as many problems as we think they might, that game really could be potentially one where Texas Tech could steal a win against a team that a lot of people expect to be in the top half of the conference. I mean, are you expecting, though, those games against the other teams that are potentially in the bottom? You know, you play West Virginia at home, you play Kansas at home, you're going to be traveling to TCU. Do you think that all three of those are fairly reasonable to consider, that, you know, there's a really good chance you guys are going to win those games? Or are there any games maybe potentially that you think that the fan base might be a little more confident than you are that Texas Tech could pull that one out?
I don't necessarily think so. I think I really do think that the bottom half of the Big 12 are going to be a ton of toss-up games. And Texas Tech has quite a few of those that are in Lubbock. So the West Virginia, the Baylor, those are toss-up games to me. And then having Kansas at home is certainly beneficial. So that's nice. You know, the only thing that really bothers me, and the TCU game, that's really an odd game because Texas Tech ends up selling a ton of tickets for that game. So although it's TCU's home game, you know, there's no other school that's that far west because there's just a ton of Texas Tech grads in the DFW area and in Fort Worth because, you know, Lubbock is only a 4.5-hour drive away from TCU. So it's a lot closer than maybe people kind of think, and a lot of Tech grads end up, you know, heading that direction. So that one, doesn't bother me as much. TCU doesn't have as big of a home field advantage as maybe other programs do. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, that sounds pretty fair. Not being familiar with the layout of Texas, that seems fairly reasonable. It's kind of the same way where, you know, like in basketball, you would think that Manhattan would be a home field advantage for Kansas State, but KU fans are so close. They travel so well that, you know, even though it's definitely slanted towards Kansas State, it's nowhere near the overwhelming, you know, K-State fans that you're typically used to seeing. So, I can understand how that would potentially work. I guess really my next question would be, though, you know, you have that theoretically a murderer's row of playing against Texas, then going to Oklahoma State and going to Kansas State, and then potentially a brief respite of, you know, Kansas and then TCU in a road game that's not necessarily going to be quite so much a road game. Any worries, though, about that three-game stretch prior to the Kansas game just being so much that it puts them at a disadvantage going into Kansas?
Yes, very much so. I think that is definitely our toughest stretch. I do worry about it, and I do worry about facing Kansas. I haven't really done a ton of homework on these teams just yet, so I'm kind of getting into that mode as we speak. Those games definitely worry me. Texas worries me because I think that, you know, Herman has kind of got them on a mission a little bit. I think that, you know, I think that those kids kind of have, like, the right attitude, and he's kind of been a good leader through this whole situation, if you will, that we've had going on in this country. So which is a little bit surprising for me because I didn't know he had it in him, but he has, and I think he's done a good job. The only other thing is that, you know, at Oklahoma State, that has been an incredibly tough place for us to play. And I do not expect for us to go in there and necessarily do very well just because historically we haven't. You know, last year we beat Oklahoma State in a really weird game. But again, Oklahoma State's biggest fault is Spencer Sanders turns the ball over like a son of a gun. And so, if he does the same thing, he's probably not going to be the quarterback at that point. It's probably going to be somebody else. So if he can learn to not turn the ball over, then they'll actually be pretty good. And then playing at Kansas State, that always bothers me because I think that they were actually pretty good last year. But I'm not necessarily shaking in my boots about facing Kansas State on the road either. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those, you know, if their offensive line and defensive line are as strong this year as they were last year, they're going to be a really tough team to beat. I mean, that was really their strength last year, and they were able to kind of put the rest of the pieces around them. And if, you know, if they have that bedrock of the offensive and defensive line, it's going to be hard for anybody to really put them away, and they'll be in every game. The real question is just going to be, are they going to get enough from those skill positions? I think for the most part they will, but there's definitely going to be at least you know, two or three different games where they just don't have the skill position players to really, you know, even with that foundation that they have, they won't have the skill position players to really kind of push past. And so, all right, real quick, I need to throw it to one more quick break before we come back to wrap up real quick. So we'll be right back on the Rock Talk podcast. And we're back. Okay, so to kind of finish up, I want to focus now specifically on this Kansas game. Because again, this is towards the end of the year. You know, it's obviously given what happened last year in that game that was up and down and absolutely insane. Are you expecting this game against Kansas to be similarly kind of an insane game with a lot of offense going back and forth? Or do you think that there's something different enough about either of these teams this year that maybe it's not going to be quite as exciting as you might think?
I don't know. I mean, Kansas on the road isn't necessarily very good, correct?
Unless they're playing Texas.
Yeah, that's true, too. There's always an exception, isn't there? but Texas Tech wasn't very good on the road either. And so I think that's always kind of like the downfall of any team, whether it be basketball or football, is that if you can't win on the road, you're just not going to be very good. And bad teams don't win on the road. I don't think that Texas Tech is necessarily a great team. I think that teams, that's when you start to get over the hump, is whenever you can start to win on the road. I don't know that Kansas is there yet. So I'm kind of expecting Texas Tech to actually win this game, not necessarily easily, but maybe like by a touchdown or so. I'm still crazy worried about Texas Tech, you know, winning most games, especially on the road. And I really don't know what Kansas returns at quarterback. And to me, that's a huge deal. I'm guessing that Dearman's probably the kind of quarterback coach that can get guys ready. You know, I think that he's probably, you know, I think offensive coordinators have gotten significantly better at getting guys ready, you know, within a season. And so I'm not necessarily doubting that, you know, they're going to have a terrible quarterback play, but that's always been Kansas's biggest downfall. And last year they had really outstanding quarterback play.
I mean, I don't even know that Carter Stanley played outstanding last year. I just think they finally were able to get a guy to really build the offense around what he is able to do. And what I've noticed, and actually kind of one of the, you know, the lore of Brent Dearman, as it kind of expands, is there was actually a 4-game stretch. I forget whether it was at his last stop or if it was one of the prior ones where he was head coach. He actually had a 4-game stretch where he was on his 4th-string quarterback, who was a wide receiver to start the year, and they won 4 games by double digits because of the way he was able to adapt his system. The thing about Brent Dearman is, you know, he has the very basic concepts of what he expects, but he's really good at adapting that general framework to the guys that he has and, you know, having enough optionality built into place to allow those guys to really kind of take what they do well and plug it in. And so I think that, you know, Kansas will be okay, even if they don't have a clear cut quarterback to start, because they have all the other skill position players. You know, they can play a run heavy game if they need to. They can play, you know, throwing ball out into the flats and you know, relying on that speed. They have a really good wide receiver core where almost all of them are returning. You know, and so like they have all the pieces there if they can get a quarterback that can just get the ball to people in certain spots where they need them. And so like I am trusting Brent Dearman to be able to do that. They also, you know, they have a redshirt senior, a redshirt junior, and then they have Jalen Daniels is a quarterback that actually was recruited by Brent Dearman. I don't think he'll be ready in time because of everything that's going on with the COVID-19 stuff. But there is definitely a possibility that, you know, Brent Dearman was the guy that actually recruited him and was raving about what he can actually do. So if they can get him ready by this particular game, you know, you could see Jalen Daniels playing this game and them doing something completely different than what they had done earlier in the year, just because of the capabilities of the different quarterbacks. And so I think that's the hardest part for me in trying to predict what Kansas is going to do, because Brent Dearman has shown in his prior stops the ability to adapt what he does to the game plan for each individual game, to the guys that are on the field, and he can change it at the drop of a hat. And a lot of people don't really know what's coming because he has so much options built into the offense that he built. I honestly, it's frustrating. It's frustrating for me not knowing what he's going to be doing, but it's also exciting at the same time.
So then do you think that Kansas improves defensively?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
Do you think that Kansas improves significantly defensively?
That I'm not so sure on. I mean, they've got, you know, they lost two really good defensive secondary in Mike Lee and, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the other name. But they're two safeties. They ended up losing both of them, the seniors that were really, really, really kind of pushing this team forward. And so, like, they've got a lot of pieces that are coming back, and they are going to be a decent team. They've got some good corners that are coming back. The real question is going to be, you know, in the linebacking core, because they had problems last year with injuries there, but they had a lot of freshmen that stepped up and played a lot better than I think most people expected them to. And so the question is going to be, are they going to be able to build on that? And is DJ Elliott, the defensive coordinator, really going to be able to push them forward and get them to be able to do what they need to do? They don't need to jump up and become, you know, a, you know, top third defense in all of college football. They really just kind of need to get to be an average defense. And if the offense is able to take advantage of Brent Dierman's scheming, they could make a significant jump this year just on the back of that offense.
Yeah, I mean, Tech is kind of in the same spot, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's gonna be interesting this year to kind of see what they're able to do. So I guess kind of final thought here as we're wrapping up for the night, is there anything in particular about this Kansas team that kind of scares you as a Texas Tech fan?
Puka being back still worries me, but we seem to do an okay job stopping him last year, I think. I don't think he ran all over us. He's crazy talented. So that probably worries me more than anything else. And I think that just, you know, once a team like Texas Tech starts to lose, or once a team starts to lose, it's really hard to dig out. It's like being, I compared it to today, it's like getting in credit card debt. Digging your way out of credit card debt is ridiculously hard, and Kansas is in the same boat. So it's just, you know, it's very hard to dig out because the interest rate is so high, and it's just almost impossible to pull yourself up. And so you just can't afford to get to that point. And I think that Kansas, unfortunately, did get to that point way too fast, way too soon. So I think that if Tech can kind of build on what they did last year and turn around some of those close games, they'll be a lot better. I think that I'm kind of predicting kind of like a seventh or so finish for Texas Tech this year, believe it or not.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely possible. I don't think either Kansas or Texas has any chance of getting out of, you know, the bottom four in the conference. But I do think you can make a reasonable argument for either of them being in that seventh spot. I think there's also a fairly reasonable argument that the defense for either one just completely tanks and the bottom falls out, and, you know, they can't really get anything done all year long. So it'll be interesting to kind of see how that plays out for everybody. All right, Seth, thank you for joining me tonight. Where can people find your work online?
You can find me at stakingtheplains.com. That's where our website is. You can find us on Twitter at stakingtheplane without the S. And that's where we're at. We talk Texas Tech all the time.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you coming on. And I thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, please go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the other million apps that are out there. Just search for Rock Chalk Talk, and you can subscribe to us there. Get every episode as soon as it comes out. If you can give us a rating and a review, 5 stars, nice comments, it would be absolutely fantastic. But if you can't, for whatever reason, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring this podcast to you guys to get you guys all the information you need in as entertaining a way as possible. So if you ever have any comments, questions, suggestions, people you want to try to interview, topics you want to cover, anything like that, you can contact me by email at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rockchalkpod. Seth, thanks again for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.